Hi, welcome to Off Script. I'm Zach Lewis.
And I'm Dr. Draper.
Today on the show, we are taking a look at M. Night Shyamalan's new thriller, Trap. It is out. We are tired of seeing the concert trailer in front of every movie. Now we've seen the film. We are excited to talk about it. Better than people are saying, in my humble opinion. Stick around for the review. We're also going to take a look at Cuckoo. Yes, the new horror thriller starring Hunter Schafer and Dan Stevens. This one's weird, folks. It's weird, but it's kind of also rad. So please stick around for the review. We're going to talk about D23. Disney's big expo is happening. Incredible announcements if you're a big Disney fan. If not, you might not be so swayed, but we're going to review it. We're going to go over all the big hits for you in the middle of our show before we get to all of it. We need to talk about the news. Our first story this week, Kevin Costner's Horizon Chapter 2 gets a Venice world premiere. Big news for Costner heads out there, all right? Like, there was a minute where it seemed like Horizon 2 maybe wasn't going to happen. It might get pulled. It's officially back on the slate. It's coming to theaters. But first, it's stopping at Venice. Andy, what do you know about this?
Horizon heads, rejoice. So, they pulled this because Horizon Part 1, originally, it didn't do very well. And so, they were hoping to let audience have a chance to discover the first one a little bit more, which is fancy ways of saying they're going to stall, but they're going to do the same strategy they did for the first one, which was to premiere it at a festival like Cannes, like they did in May, and then hopefully to great acclaim, and then audiences will be excited about it. That's what they did with Part 1, and they're doing that again with Part 2 at the Venice Film Festival, which is on September 7th. And not only are they going to show Part 2, they will show Part 1 in the morning. So if you are there, you can get all 6 hours of Horizon, an American Saga Part 1 and 2 together. So this is a strategy to hopefully get more eyes on the movie, get a little bit more buzz on Part 2. I still think this is doomed, but it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
That's right. If you're hearing about Part 2 now and you're thinking, hold on, what happened to Part 1? It already came out and you missed it, just like most other people. Horizon Chapter 1 came to theaters. It's like over 3 hours in length, huge cast of characters, but it was reviewed kind of poorly because people just said it didn't really go anywhere. It feels like a whole lot of setup that doesn't lead to anything. Obviously, Chapter 2 would be much anticipated by the fans that have seen it, but meanwhile, they've been trying to jockey how we can get more eyes to it and get it in front of more people, so this seems like a big way to put it up on the screen, big flash, boom, Horizon is still here, it's still relevant, come check it out. We're going to have it at Venice, it'll get some press, it'll get some buzz, hopefully that'll get people moving on Chapter 1, and if we can get that to a streamer or get it so people can see it easily, then maybe that'll build up some hype for Chapter 2 to come to theaters. We did not cover Chapter 1 on this show. There was a lot of stuff coming out that week, and we were busy, and admittedly, we're not super into like the 3-hour runtime for the big Western epic, but listen, I would love for these movies to turn around and be something awesome. If Chapter 2 comes out and has incredible reviews, it's tough to say we wouldn't cover it on this show. So I, for one, am willing to say that I would be here for Horizon if it turns out. Well, but I guess we'll have to see. Andy, would you be willing to watch this feature? What do you think?
You know, I think I would actually be more willing since Part 2 is out, because I heard Part 1 was all set up and it doesn't really get going, and like Costner doesn't show up for the first hour. So the fact that Part 2 would probably have a little bit more payoff and development might make it more kind of binge worthy, you know, maybe watch it over a couple of weeks, all 6 hours of it. But it's a big ask. It feels like TV.
Yeah, it feels like TV. And I think that may be where it's best adapted. Like, just not long ago, I rewatched Hateful Eight Extended Edition, the Quentin Tarantino feature on Netflix, which is split into 3 parts. It's longer than the original run of the film, but it's like kind of segmented, and it actually works real good and makes it real easy to kind of watch an hour and then take a break or come back to it. Nothing wrong with that formula, I don't think. It's totally reasonable for Horizon. Hopefully Costner's willing to pivot a little out of theaters to get more people interested. What's coming to theaters is certainly more interesting, though. Britney Spears has a biopic officially happening at Universal in a huge, huge deal. Fierce bidding war, according to the New York Times, who wrote this up. It looks like John M. Chu's going to direct it. Who's the director of Wicked, coming out this Thanksgiving, and then assumedly Wicked Part 2 to follow that, also directed In the Heights. Big musical director, right? Covering the Britney Spears biopic. Pretty exciting. I don't know. Andy, is this going to be like an Amy Winehouse Back in Black situation? Or do you think this is going to be, like Queen, Bohemian Rhapsody? Where are we going with the music biopic for Britney Spears?
I mean, this is going to be massive, whatever it is. Britney Spears is such an icon, and it's strange because she's very young still. She's only in her early 40s, so it's kind of weird to have a biopic when someone's still like got that much life left. Seems a little premature, but she did write a book recently, The Woman in Me, and there's been a huge bidding war in Hollywood. At one point, Shonda Rhimes was attached, Brad Pitt, Margot Robbie. So everyone was kind of wanted in on this. And who knows what direction they could go. It could be a jukebox musical, which is something like Bohemian Rhapsody, or something else completely. But it plays to millennial nostalgia, and it's going to be massive. The big question is, you know, who plays Britney?
Yeah, I have no idea, honestly. I mean, it's got to be an up-and-coming starlet, of course, right? Like somebody who's got some big chops. I don't imagine they'll sing. They did say that this is upwards of like an 8-figure deal, including like a ton of her catalog. So they'd probably just be using her music direct. Also some big talent behind it. Next to John M. Chu, there's Mark Platt, producer of Wicked with John M. Chu, and La La Land, which we're big fans of on this show. Universal is not shying away from this. They talked about how they've got a Snoop Dogg biopic also coming and a Prince music-inspired film in development. That they're doing a project with Pharrell Williams. I think they did that Lego movie with him. So like, they're definitely in the music scene. They've definitely got music talent. They've definitely got Britney. But you're right. Who's going to be? Any guesses? I have no guesses at this stage. I'd love to say somebody like Sydney Sweeney, but like, I don't think it's going to happen. I have no idea who it's going to be.
No, you got to have someone that can play a pretty wide range age-wise, because Britney Spears' career started when she was like 15, 16, like very, very young. So you got to do someone who could do very young Britney Spears and then into like 20s and 30s Britney Spears. So it's going to be maybe a newcomer, but definitely someone on the pretty young side. And then you got to be able to sing and dance, or at least look like it. So it's going to be a big demand. I can't think of any young up and comers who could do it. I think you probably cast an unknown, and it's also probably a little bit cheaper that way.
Yeah, well, no better segue. Speaking of young up-and-comers, we're very excited to announce the holdover star, Dominic Sessa, is going to be Anthony Bourdain in the Anthony Bourdain biopic Tony, that's reportedly coming to A24 with BlackBerry director Matt Johnson in talks to helm. This is a big announcement. Bourdain's a big guy, lived a big life, traveled the world, parts unknown, no reservations, right? CNN correspondent, you know him for his food reviews, his travel reviews, you've probably seen his books in Barnes & Noble. And now our boy Dominic Sessa's got another big role in front of him, right? Like, it may not be a bad fit. What do you think, Andy?
Really excited for Dominic Sessa to be on board with this, because we knew he was a huge star in The Holdovers, and which is an amazing story in itself, because he was just happened to be going to the school where they were filming it, and he auditioned for the part. Like, he was still in high school when they started shooting, and now he's just a star, and I was really anxious to see what he was going to do next. So I like that he's landed this big lead role playing this iconic character. So I hope he knocks it out of the park, and I think that's really exciting, and I'm interested to see what Matt Johnson does. Because I haven't seen BlackBerry, but I've heard that it's really good.
I actually watched BlackBerry just a couple months ago, and Johnson's stars in it and is good in it, but also does a great job directing. I get why it's got the indie buzz it has. Glenn Howerton has a couple really big scenes in it that I know I've seen clips of on Twitter. But I think Bourdain will be good content for a biopic. I actually was just reading an excerpt from one of his books that somebody got me for a gift not that long ago, a travel book. And he talked about growing up just outside Boston, over by the coast, on the East Coast, a young chef doing lots of drugs, partying, like living in shacks with his friends, like just making it barely to work on time. And then eventually like becoming a person who begins to travel out and grow and falling into cooking and falling in love with traveling. Like, I think there's a lot of cinematic meat there. I think he probably wouldn't have thought so, but you know, that's how movies go. So for what it's worth, I'd definitely be interested in checking out Tony whenever it comes around. One more story this week before we get to our trap review from the box office. Deadpool and Wolverine is unstoppable, dude. Not to mention It Ends With Us, which had a huge opening this week. Andy, what do you know about this?
Well, some of the big news is that Deadpool and Wolverine crossed the $1 billion mark, the second movie from Disney this summer after Inside Out 2 to cross that. We'll see how far it goes. We definitely got this one wrong. I thought this would do like $750, $800 million, and then that would be it. But it's still going strong, made $50 million in its third weekend. And then a bit of a surprise, maybe, depending on who you ask, but Blake Lively's It Ends With Us, which is, she's, of course, married to Ryan Reynolds, so people are saying they kind of have had a little bit of a Barbenheimer moment, did really well with $80 million globally, $50 million domestic, and this is based on the novel by Colleen Hoover, which was a New York Times bestseller, so this Hollywood couple having both their movies at the top's a big, big deal. I'm pretty surprised about It Ends With Us. We'll talk a little bit more about the strategy in a second.
Yeah, I have a hard time really enjoying Ryan Reynolds' projects in my twilight years because he just seems like a billboard on the side of the highway now. Like every time I see him, I think, what is he selling me? What is he advertising to me? Am I buying it? And it doesn't seem like a coincidence that Deadpool and Wolverine and It Ends With Us are coming out right next to each other. Like that's awfully coincidental if that's just the way it happened to land. But if I didn't know any better, I'd say that it's a very concerted effort, like by him and their family and Blake Lively, of course, to like, you know, keep their goals on track and make sure that they're getting people to buy Aviation Gin and Mint Mobile. I say that like I think probably more cynically than it should come off, but in the larger way, I do think It Ends With Us is likely a really important message. I know my wife's a big reader. She's had a number of people ask about whether or not we're going to see it, if we've covered it on the show. We haven't, and we haven't seen it yet. It's not to say we couldn't, but for what it's worth, we've been talking about Cuckoo for like months, and I was really excited to launch Cuckoo, so I'm glad we got to check that out. Between the break for Trap last week, it just ended up too perfect. But Andy, what do you think? Am I too cynical about Ryan Reynolds? Should I maybe relax? I mean, I just feel like the man is constantly trying to sell me something.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. In the lead up to Deadpool and Wolverine, there were so many ads for like Heineken and his tequila or whiskey, whatever it is. Like, yeah, it's just constant brand, like buy my brand of this and that. And it kind of, yeah, just wears you down after a while. I also wanted to mention that the Borderlands movie came out, huge bomb, $110 million budget. Made under $10 million this weekend. And it's, I was going to give it a chance. I kind of liked the way it looked a little bit, but everyone said it was really bad, has like a 7% on Rotten Tomatoes. Huge bomb.
Yeah, and which is a real bummer because I played the Borderlands games and normally would be like ripe audience to go see that. But man, I saw people, I mean, it dropped with a 0 on Rotten, a 0%. Now it's at like a 7, but like I saw people saying like, boy, they wish they'd been softer on Madam Web after seeing Borderlands. You know, like oh, Borderlands, man. Truly, truly nothing there. So I don't know. Maybe we'll get around to seeing Borderlands at some point. But at any rate, incredible numbers for Deadpool and Wolverine, especially an R-rated feature. Incredible numbers for It Ends With Us, as far as I can tell, both W's, Borderlands, maybe not so much. But with that, we got to move into our reviews, of course. I'm going to be taking the summary on this first feature, so please excuse my clumsy delivery. The film is Trap. So, 30,000 concert goers, 2,000 police, one serial killer. Trap is the story of Josh Hartnett, a father, right, of a young daughter, Riley, who's taking her to a concert. She wants to go see her new favorite artist, Lady Raven, this kind of gothic Taylor Swift kind of character, who's doing a big surprise concert in their town. They arrive, he manages to get tickets, they show up, and you've probably seen the trailer, right? It turns out, not all is as it seems. The entire concert is a trap set to catch the Butcher, a local serial killer who's been making the news and scaring locals. But turns out Josh Hartnett might know something about this because he's got some footage on his phone of a man tied up in a basement. And he has to get out of there and get away from the cops and escape before anybody finds out the truth. It is a Hitchcockian thriller from director M. Night Shyamalan. And it's exciting and it's different. And it features music from his daughter, Salika Shyamalan, who also stars in the film as Lady Raven. She does the music for the film. A concert is functionally all built around her concert. It is an odd father-daughter sort of love letter horror thriller feature that I'm really excited to talk about because it kind of defied expectations, I think, a little bit for me. Andy, what did you think of Trap?
So I thought this was a mixed bag. I think parts of it work. I think the technicals are very strong, like the way it's filmed, the way it's shot, a lot of the setup with, you know, they have a lot of police vehicles and things that they're working. They hired 1,000 extras to be the crowd and had to constantly move them around the stadium for different shots so it would look full. But the central premise is interesting. I think it's strong. It's just not executed particularly well. Josh Hartnett's character has to constantly come up with excuses to like kind of be away from his daughter, which don't really work. And kind of how you get to from point A to point B to point C doesn't work. The transitions don't work, but a lot of the individual scenes on their own, I think, are good. Really strong acting. Salika Shyamalan actually does a fair bit of acting in this. I thought she was surprisingly good. She had a bigger role than I thought. Same thing with Allison Pill and Haley Mills. And if you don't know who Haley Mills is, she plays the like psychologist, the profiler in this. But she was the original girl from the original Parent Trap from like 1962 that she did when she was like 17. And this was like, she hasn't done a movie in a really long time. So it's really, really funny that she ended up in this. So there's lots to talk about. I think there is a lot that worked. Like most Shyamalan, it's just, it's sloppy and it doesn't come together. But I think there's still a lot of positive things to talk about.
All right. So I'm going to come out on the other side of this. I disagree that it's sloppy. It's well, I take it back. It is sloppy. But I do want to highlight what you opened with is absolutely correct. It's strong in the technicals. It's a well-shot movie. Shyamalan is really good at understanding where to place the camera and how to build space. And he does this really clever thing in this movie where he'll do one-point perspective with people that Hartnett is talking to at the concert. You see it in the trailer, right? Jamie, the concert guy, the guy working there who's selling shirts, who's like, this whole place is a trap. He explains it straight to the camera, right? And Hartnett talks straight back to him. This happens a number of times in the feature. Additionally, he's got to, you know, kind of navigate things with his daughter because she's none the wiser, right? Like, she's just at the concert. So we, the audience members, know there's suspense, that we know that there's stakes, we know there's something going on here, and our protagonist has to try to get out of the mousetrap before it snaps on him. It's Hitchcockian because it's a bit of a bottle feature, right? Like, you've got your whole conflict happening in one set place, but the place it's happening is very large and very grand and big in scale. And that's something that Shyamalan does really well in this movie. I think the concert stuff works really good. They got floor seats functionally, so you're already pretty close to the stage. But as the film goes on, we begin to move closer and further. There's like hidden panels that come out of the floor for special effects stuff. There's goofy costumes on stage. There's big set designs. And the music isn't bad, admittedly, like for what's here. Salika Shyamalan not only does a good job acting in the movie, she did a good job putting the music together. The performances are solid. They're sultry and big tones, big vocals. Like, I think all that stuff works really good. But I think where this movie falters is the broad strokes of the script, which Shyamalan penned, right? Like, it's the big writing. It's how we get from A to B to C to D, and keeping your audience on that track and believing that the world you're building is real, that's where things get shaky. That's where I think people feel like Trap underperforms and doesn't keep interest. And you go, wait a second, how did he get from there to there? How did this happen that way? That doesn't make any sense. You start to poke holes in the narrative of Trap because, admittedly, it's a premise that's kind of full of holes, I think. And that does create some problems.
Yeah, it's kind of like a B movie. And I think Josh Hartnett does a great job. But unfortunately, he's like a much more incompetent Hannibal Lecter, like, because he's supposed to kind of, you know, he's outsmarted the police, he's outsmarted everyone, but he's trapped here, he's trying to get out. He keeps needing to like go places while he's at the concert, and so he leaves his daughter like three or four times. Like, he's like, oh, I gotta go check on this or that, I gotta go get a t-shirt, and it's real clumsy. Like, it's just like, no one would believe you. Like, you're so suspicious right now. And also the plan to like trap him isn't very good either, because it's just like, oh, we're gonna get him on the way out. But it's like, there's 3,000, they identified 3,000 men, and it's just like, can easily just saunter his way out. I don't think that's a very good plan either. We are not at the concert the entire time, which I was kind of glad to see. But the way we kind of get out of there and move to a different location is also fairly implausible. Like he's supposed to kind of be like a criminal genius, and it's just not very smart, or it's just not kind of believable enough. But once we get to those different locations, it is a lot more interesting.
Yeah, I really can't understate how good Hartnett is in this movie. It's such a delight to see him playing a protagonist role again. I know we saw him recently in Oppenheimer as a brief supporting cast, just like many other people, many other great actors in that movie. And it's nice to see him in the front, and I think he's doing a great job with what's here. Shyamalan reportedly casted him after they met and kind of talked about movies they were working on, and Hartnett told him he was working on Oppenheimer. And then they got to talking about their daughters, because they both have three daughters, as I understand. It's funny, one of Shyamalan's other daughters is in film. She made The Watchers, which is another thriller that just came out. It was her first movie. We didn't cover it on this show. There's a brief shot of a billboard of The Watchers in this movie, though. So, like, making sure we got some love on both sides of the aisle. Shout out Shyamalan. But reportedly, after meeting and talking about being a father to daughters and what that's like, that's when Shyamalan really fell in love with the idea of Hartnett taking on the role. It's also funny you mentioned Silence of the Lambs, Andy. That's exactly how Shyamalan pitched this feature. He said it was like Silence of the Lambs at a concert, which is like probably too big, I think, for what it is. But I mean, you're right in the way that like you have this seedy character who is presented as rather sharp, who is acting like somebody they're not and trying desperately to get out of the situation that they're kind of trapped in. And for what it's worth, while I do think him getting away from Riley and Riley, I should say, played by Ariel Donahue, who's good. She's good. She's fine. No problems with Riley. Him asking to leave her for the fifth or sixth time and her for the second or third time being like, "Dad, you're being really weird. What's going on?" You know, it's like, okay, you're really stretching like as far as people would believe this. But I had an okay time putting that stuff on the side, because I felt like I knew going in that Trap is on its face an absurd premise, and I wasn't looking for anything that's like too grounded in realism. I just kind of wanted to have fun at the movies. And in that way, I should say, I think that's somewhere where Shyamalan's dialogue shines. I think you can start to wander in so bad it's good territory when it comes to Shyamalan's chunky dialogue, because it's always been chunky. Even in stuff that he built off other stuff, like Knock at the Cabin was based on a book, and even that one had chunky dialogue. Like, he didn't even write all that. But like somehow in here, it managed to work for me. I fell under the spell. I kind of fell into it. I heard people comparing him to auteurs like Yorgos Lanthimos and Wes Anderson with their dialogue. I don't know if I'd go as far as to say
that. Get that out of here right now.
Come on now. I don't think that's true. But the man, again, the man's been working for 25 years. Like, he's got the basics down so good that he can get creative with the camera. He can get creative with the premise. I don't know. I kind of went for it. It kind of worked, which is a surprise because it got like a 50 on Rotten. And when I tweeted that, I liked it, people were like, "What do you mean?" But, you know.
There were parts that do work in that Silence of the Lambs kind of way, where he creates several smart distractions that are pretty sinister. Like when we see this in the trailer, like he there's a woman who's a little ill, and he kind of bumps into her and she falls down the stairs, and that creates a big distraction enough for him to go do something. And then he throws some bottles of oil into the deep fryer, which create a small explosion, again, distraction. And there's a part where he gets his hands on a radio. Those little things are smart, but then some of the larger strokes, like, you have to really suspend disbelief to, and that's the part that doesn't quite work. I did like, this reminded me a lot of Tenet, actually, the very opening, because Tenet has that big, there's a big concert going on, lots of police outside running through the venue.
The opera, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So very similar in that way. The dialogue for me, sometimes it is kind of bad.
It's kind of bad. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like if you're writing a screenplay and you're writing your first draft and you don't really have the dialogue down, you just kind of write like the idea of like what you want to get to. And that's what this feels like. It just needed a lot more polish to make the dialogue feel more natural.
Yeah. Additionally, I don't want to talk too much about spoilers or where things go, But in the broad strokes, I should say this film has a problem of the wandering protagonist, namely in that it can't really decide who the protagonist is towards the end of the feature. Because if you think of Silence of the Lambs, right, Hannibal Lecter is not the lead.
Hannibal Lecter is
only in like 16 minutes of that movie. And this movie kind of takes some liberties, I think, with kind of who is in charge of the action at multiple points, and it pivots around. And a couple people I know that have seen it have talked about it and brought it up. It's odd. So if you see it, write into the show, let us know what you think. But I additionally think, I don't know, Sleeka Shyamalan's really good, Hartnett's really good, and yeah, it's a goofy premise, but like for summer at the movies, like I think I had a pretty good time for 90 minutes. I do want to mention before I wrap it up though, the relationship between Shyamalan and his daughter who handled the music and starred in this. Sleeka, this is her first film she's ever starred in as far as I know, and she does a good job in it, right? Like she's not bad. And
yep,
Trap
absolutely.
Trap is this sort of meta love letter to Shyamalan, and him standing in the audience at her concerts and watching her perform and seeing her from the side of the audience is a big part of this, and seeing the big screens and seeing the costumes and seeing the security officers and the people in the arena. Like that's all a big part of it. And I think where this comes from is Shyamalan being a filmmaker, being a creative, being in that audience and letting his mind wander a little bit and thinking, this is an interesting scenario. This is an interesting setup. What if something was off here? What if I was a bad guy and needed to escape? How would that work? How would that look? And yeah, it's kind of a goofy thought exercise on the one hand, but on the other, it's a bit of a bottle thriller. And it's a bit of a, maybe not so thrilling as this funny at times, but ultimately, like I ended up having a surprising amount of fun with Trap. What do you think?
Yeah, I think there's definitely fun to be had. Again, you got to go in not taking it too seriously. It is a little bit like a Twilight Zone or a Black Mirror episode, something along those lines. Technology is actually a big part of it, and I also want to remind everyone that Shyamalan has this unique strategy with his movies where he self-finances them, makes them, and then sells them to a studio. And so that's why his stuff gets made a little bit more, because a studio, he doesn't have to greenlight it at a studio. He doesn't have to get all these people on board and get that money. He self-finances, which is why they are a little on the cheap side sometimes, or cheaper side. But it's a strategy that keeps him working and producing a lot of what he wants to do.
Yeah. As a agent of maniacal chaos, I think Hartnett Cooper is the name of his character. I probably should have opened with that. Hartnett's a lot of fun. And I think in that same way, like Shyamalan brings a certain something to his writing that is here in Trap that I didn't see so much in Knock at the Cabin. And I should say, like, I do like that it's nice to see him in kind of the thriller zone again. You know what I mean? Like Knock at the Cabin is certainly tense, but Old and Knock at the Cabin both give you the premise right up front. And well, Old takes way too long actually to get to the premise, but it's based on a graphic novel. It's fine. I guess you could lean that way. Like I like that this movie within like the first 15 minutes catches you up to the trailer and you're like, okay,
yeah.
I'm in line. I'm in the queue. I'm here for whatever is going to happen in Trap. Good pacing, albeit odd. Like, I don't know. I think it ends up being a fun feature. Any other thoughts or recommendations, Andy? I should wrap it up.
I think I'm ready.
Andy, would you recommend Trap?
I would, but I would say save it for streaming. I think it is worth giving it a watch. But if you're not super excited about it, maybe wait till home. That said, a lot of the concert stuff works really well on the big screen. The big audience, the big dance numbers, the stage, the lighting, all that kind of, that works better probably in the theater because it's more immersive. But I'm going to say save it for streaming.
I'm going to go the other way. Go see it in the theater. Although, like Andy said, I think you had a great explanation of like what you should expect, like Twilight Zone, Black Mirror episode kind of stuff. Soft gloves, nothing big. Nobody's attacking the president of the United States. There's no global war on terror. Trap is very small, and like I think that's kind of cool for what it is. I ended up having a lot more fun with it than I thought I would. I think Trap's good stuff. You should go see it in theater if you can. Don't sweat bringing a friend group. They may not all love it. It's rather divisive, according to Rotten. But for what it's worth, like I think Trap is not a good movie, but fun movie. And ultimately, like, when you're going to the movies this summer, like, I think that's, you know, I think it's worth mentioning. I think it's commendable. Speaking of commendable, we got to talk about some big announcements that just happened this last week. We were off of the week. We were off last week. We're here now. We're here to cover it. Andy, what do we call this segment?
It's time for the death of cinema. So we're going to be covering D23, which is Disney's annual big announcements of film. And it's basically like Comic-Con, but just for Disney. You know, the famous Hall H at Comic-Con. Disney just does an entire weekend of just their stuff where they have announcements of shows, movies, parks, like all stuff Disney. And we got a lot of new announcements, things we didn't know were coming. So we're going to get right into it. One of the first announcements is Avatar 3 will be called Fire and Ash. We had some other stand-ins, I guess, for that, but that's the official title. We saw a logo, and that actually looks cool. We saw one of these Fire Na'vi that were like wearing a necklace of like the scalp, well, like the scalps of the other Na'vi. I was like, that's kind of metal. So I may actually be turning around on Avatar. We'll see.
Oh boy.
we'll see what that looks like. Yeah, it looks a little dark. We also got an announcement of Toy Story 5, which will be coming out June 2026, so a couple years away. The tagline here is toy meets tech when Buzz, Woody, Jesse, and the rest of the gang's job get exponentially harder as they go head-to-head with all new threat to playtime. So toys versus tech. Zach, what do you think of that?
Well, first, regarding Avatar 3, I think people are officially on the hype train for Avatar. I think Avatar is going to make $1 billion, which is nuts. Like, because when Avatar 2 got announced, it was like, yeah, right. There's no way he does it again. And yeah, not only did people think it was cool, the stuff for Avatar 3 looks cool. So here we are, like, get back on the Cameron train. I couldn't believe he even came out. They actually had James Cameron on stage. Jim Cameron himself, he came up from the bottom of the ocean in his submarine. So that was neat. And then regarding Toy Story 5, dude, all right, I got a soft spot for Toy Story because those movies were coming out when I was coming up, and then Toy Story 3 was Andy going to college, and that was the year I was going to college, and all of my classmates were going to college, so that big change in life was a big thing. 4 was like a leftover script from John Lasseter that never should have got made. It came out as a fine feature, but nobody was too excited about it. And Toy Story 5 taking on tech, great premise. But dude, Toy Story leans into tech. They made all those shorts to sell Disney Plus. That was like the Spoon character, Spoony Plays or whatever. And like,
oh gosh,
they held these little like tech things, and they got Toy Story on the Apple Watch. I'm like, okay, that's very sweet that you guys are going to be swinging on big tech when you are big tech. But much like Disney producing Deadpool, it'll probably be a good time. Like regardless of the, you know, parental hypocrisy. I don't know what I'm trying to say. Toy Story 5 will probably be fine.
Yeah. Pixar had another announcement of a film called Hoppers, which comes out in 2026. And it's about a girl named Mabel, who's an animal lover, who seizes an opportunity to use new technology to hop her consciousness into a lifelike robot animal, an adorable beaver. So it'll be kind of an out-of-body Pixar thing. We didn't see anything, not even a logo or any footage, but that's 2026, so another 2 years away. So we'll see. That's Pixar's like only original idea upcoming. Zach, what do you think about Hoppers?
Yeah, I do want to talk about some other stuff Pixar announced, but regarding Hoppers, you know, it seems like it could be fine. It seems like it could be fun. It seems like an idea that would have come from like the Pixar of like 10 or 15 years ago, you know, like a Soft Glove, Bugs Life, Monsters, Inc., Finding Nemo kind of idea. Like, okay, yeah, like can hop into and out of beavers. Sure, I kind of get that. But somebody had, it was a great TikTok about this over the weekend. Somebody was like, boy, I'm so tired of Pixar just announcing sequels and sequels and remakes and sequels. Why won't they do anything original? They said, sure, here's Hoppers, a movie about a girl who turns into a robot beaver. And they're like, that's terrible. That's awful. You know, like where's something new and original? That's fine. Elio looks okay. I know they announced a little bit more stuff about Pixar's next original Elio, that feature. But really in sequel territory, we got a lot of announcements. Number one, Big fan of Brad Bird over here. Incredibles 3, very exciting. All right, Brad Bird is developing Incredibles 3. I like Brad Bird. I think Brad Bird's great. He directed The Iron Giant. He did Incredibles 1 and 2. Like, I think that could be a good time. I don't know where you go with more Incredibles, but Inside Out 2 just made over $1 billion, so they're going to make Incredibles 3. Zootopia 2 got announced, which is not from Pixar. It's Disney Animated Studios. They showed a clip, very exciting, right? You got the old characters back. I don't know where they're going to go with Zootopia 2, but Inside Out 2 made $1 billion, so they're making Zootopia 2. Frozen 3 has already been announced, but that's coming in 2027. Also Disney Animated Studios, not technically Pixar, but the waters get muddy the further down we go. Frozen 2 did good. Frozen 1, I think. No, Frozen 2 made more money than Frozen 1, I think. So that's correct. I'm sure Frozen 3 is just going to make more. And again, for anybody out there hoping for originals, Inside Out 2 made $1 billion, so we're just going to keep making sequels. This is a trend here in where Disney's at now, and especially Pixar. And I can't blame them, because 6 weeks ago, I was on this very podcast talking about how they should make more original stuff, and it's lame, and they shouldn't do stupid sequels and remakes. And I have been aghast every week seeing Inside Out 2 continue to make more money. So, my God, the bean counters might have it. This isn't it. There's a couple others. Freakier Friday, the sequel to Freaky Friday, starring Jamie Lee Curtis and Lindsay Lohan. We got some more announcements about that. I don't think we have any footage or anything, but that is coming. Live action follow-up to Freaky Friday, where they switch with their granddaughters or something now. I'm not even really sure. Then, of course, we got to look at the live-action Lilo and Stitch, which is really just an animated Stitch, but animated more lifelike, right? Kind of like that Lion King look. I heard people on both sides of the aisle about this. I heard people say he looked terrible. I heard people say he looked good. He's still voiced by original director and voice actor Chris Sanders, which is good. I think he looks fine. I think the Lilo and Stitch remake does not need to happen, but I thought most of them didn't need to happen. And Inside Out 2 made $1 billion. So what do I know? What do you think of these, Andy? Like, what am I being too cynical now off the reservation?
I mean, it's a little depressing, because it's just like these are all sequels and or remakes, reboots of all these properties. And it's a little bit of a letdown. I am excited for Incredibles 3 because I love The Incredibles. That's probably my favorite Pixar film, the first one. Especially, those have been really good. It's a fun idea. Zootopia 2 is A, propaganda. B, I'm not excited about it. Frozen 3, again, not for me. Frozen 3, I'm surprised how long it's taking for that to come out, because that was, again, announced last year. So it'll be like 4 or 5 years since Frozen 2. It's like kind of a long time. Freakier Friday, I'm sure that'll be fun. Lilo and Stitch, I've actually never seen the original, but there's probably an audience that for that. Yeah.
Oh, dude, some trailers soon. That movie rocks.
some trailers that were shown. We got a glimpse of the longer Moana 2 trailer, and looks like Moana is off on another journey to save her people. All of these kind of blended together, and I can't remember them really well. Skeleton Crew, which is TV, but is a new Star Wars property with starring Jude Law. That looks fine. Agatha All Along, the very long gestating Marvel series following up from WandaVision from 2021. Like, again, taking so long to come out with Catherine Hahn. I do like Catherine Hahn, though. We got our first glimpse of Snow White starring Rachel Zegler. This looked really kind of not great. Everything is CGI. Like, her hair looks CGI. All the dwarves are CGI. Not a good look. And then we got a full trailer of Tufasa, the Lion King, got a little bit more of the plot and the look of that. That looks fine. That'll probably do fine. These don't look great. I'm sure they'll be a hit with the kids.
Yeah, I pretty much land in the same place as all of those. Moana 2 looks a little stronger than the Moana 1 trailer, or the Moana 2 teaser trailer. I gave that trailer a hard time for functionally showing nothing new and just recycling a bunch of assets from the first movie. A little bit more here. Credit where it's due. Of course, they got to make more. Good for them. Skeleton Crew looks fine. Looks like a Amblin Entertainment-inspired Star Wars story. Four young tykes off lost in space. Got to find their way home. Agatha All Along. What is there to say? Catherine Hahn, right? She's Agatha. She's been Agatha. She's been Agatha all along. Snow White looks bad. Snow White, I think we knew was going to look bad, because we knew that the seven dwarves were all like CGI, and we knew that they were probably shooting the volume. But like, dude, I didn't know how bad they were going to do Rachel Ziegler's hair. Like, my God, she's been getting dunked on all weekend.
She looks like Lord Farquaad.
Dude, she's swinging on Twitter. She's coming back at people. Good for her. Respect. Gal Gadot is the Wicked Witch, is going to be fine, probably. And then Mufasa, like, admittedly, credit where it's due, the full trailer does give us a little bit more emotional core at the center of the film. That's what Barry Jenkins has been talking about for a couple months, and people wrote it off as, like, just another Lion King sequel. He's like, no. There's something good in this script. There's a reason I'm doing this movie. I could see that in this new trailer, but it also just looks like more CGI junk trailer, right? Like, I don't know. Maybe I've gone around the sun too many times. Maybe I've watched one too many movies. As an adult Disney fan, as somebody who was a Disney fan as a child and has grown older and continue to consume their content, it just seems a whole lot like a lot of the same. You know what I mean? It's like a lot of this. We're just reheating the thing we did a couple summers ago, and we're serving it back to you because we know it'll make money. And what kills me is it works. Because, like, I'd love to say that's creatively bankrupt, but it isn't. Inside Out 2 made $1 billion. So for all I know, I mean, this is good strategy, right? Like, this is how you run a business. This is how you run a company.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of announcements. So some people incredibly excited about it. I think a lot of those will be successful. Some of them won't. Some of them might be somewhere middling in the middle. But you know, when you're running a business, you got to play it safe more than not. And I mean, everyone can be pretty risk averse in Hollywood. So Disney's no exception.
There's one other I forgot about that I just noticed reading in here. Tron Ares. We didn't talk about Tron Ares. Tron Ares got announced. Well, it's been announced. It's a follow-up to Tron Legacy. It's created by, what's his name? Joseph Anderson. The guy who did, his name's not Joseph Anderson. Joseph Kosinski, the director of Top Gun Maverick, did the original Tron Legacy with music by Daft Punk, starring Jeff Bridges and Garrett Hedlund. Olivia Wilde. This new follow-up is a red-clad Jared Leto as the lead. See, we got a quick look at a trailer that got leaked online. I don't think there's a full trailer out yet, but Jared Leto appears to be a program that has escaped the world of Tron and has gotten into the real world, the flip of the normal Tron and Tron Legacy plot, where a real person goes into the world of Tron, the computer technology world of the internet. We've got the opposite situation, music by Nine Inch Nails, which is very exciting, which is really just Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross, but under their Nine Inch Nails brand, which I don't know if they've done anything under in a while. Not a bad follow to Daft Punk, but not, you know, too shabby either. Any hot takes on Tron Ares, Andy?
Excited for Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross to get back on it. Been a fan of all their scores. They very recently did the score for Challengers, which everyone loves. So I think it's good. The last movie was scored by Daft Punk, which was cool. That group has broken up since then, so they not available, but I'm sure Nine Inch Nails will be really awesome.
Dude, I was so upset when Daft Punk broke up. I was a big Daft Punk fan. It bums me out. So for anybody who's covering it, I guess Nine Inch Nails is not a bad pick for what it's worth. I think all of these properties are being handled pretty well, honestly. I think they're being stretched for sure, especially when you're looking at Toy Story 5, for God's sake. But for what it's worth, like, I do think Disney is making good moves here. Like, these all seem like good stuff. They made a bunch of announcements about the parks that everybody seems to like. Who goes there? Like, overall, I guess, 35,000 foot view before we move to Cuckoo, Andy, what do you think? How do you think Disney's doing at this stage?
I think they're struggling. It has been better more recently. I mean, they've had a really good summer with hits from Inside Out and Deadpool and Wolverine. But man, they're fumbling at every other of their golden properties. Star Wars has a movie. I guess that was one of the announcements, is of course The Mandalorian and Grogu is going to be next summer, I think, 2025. Or is it 2026? Maybe it's 2026. It's a ways off, but they've kind of fumbled Star Wars. They're actively fumbling Marvel. Like, yes, Deadpool and Wolverine has been a big hit. But and this is something I've come to realize, I don't think we're ever getting back to the Marvel heyday where everyone would just see everything they put out and like 3 out of every 5 movies was pretty good and you had a couple of duds, but everyone just went to see them anyways. I think we're just past that era and I don't think we're ever really going to get back to it. And I feel like Disney just keeps trying to be like, well, how can we get back to the good old days, the golden days? And then I just think it's a different landscape and it's just never going to be like that again. But they keep trying to get onto that track.
Yeah, I think I agree. Like, I do think they're spending smart here. They're putting money in good places, assuming these are reasonably priced properties and they're not doing like $300 million budgets like they did for James Mangold's Indiana Jones 5. Big bomb there. But, you know, I think you're right. Like, they don't seem to know exactly where they're headed. So in the meantime, they're going to lean on what's worked and they're just going to keep running in that direction. I do think there's maybe a lack of original work here. Hopefully they get some kind of good new stuff that comes up. Maybe Hoppers is real good. I don't know. But for what it's worth, you know, not bad. D23, pretty good, I think, for Disney fans, all things considered. As long as you're not one of those park fans. I hear people are pretty bummed by some of those announcements. But with that, we should move into our final film of the episode. Very excited to talk about this one. We've been looking forward to this for a long time on the podcast. And we're not a spoiler show. I should say that. We're not going to spoil anything. We didn't spoil anything for Trap. We didn't spoil anything for this. So I think you can listen safe if you haven't watched the film yet. But Andy's going to be taking the summary on this. Andy, please take it away.
Cuckoo. But this is the latest horror film from new director Tillman Singer, who also wrote the film. He has done some TV and some smaller films, short films. And this is his first kind of big full-length feature. This starts Hunter Schafer as Gretchen, who is moving to the Bavarian Alps in Germany with her family, with her mother and father, who are architects and are going to be building this resort out, or kind of improving this existing resort, kind of in the middle of nowhere. We arrive and meet Dan Stevens as Herr Koenig, who's a scientist slash owner of all this stuff, who's really creepy and not real trustworthy at all. There's a lot of strained family dynamics. Gretchen's mother and father are divorced parents who have been remarried. She has a half-sister named Alma, who is mute and kind of weird and who they don't get along with at all. So she's very strained. She's, you know, 17, 18. She's about to be a full-fledged adult, ready to get out of the house. She misses her mom from back in the States, struggling with the family. When they move in, she gets a job, or they employ her at the hotel, and the whole thing's really creepy. It does a very good job of being a little bit like The Shining, where they're this isolated hotel in the Bavarian Alps. There's no one up there. Dan Stevens' character very menacingly says, like, at 10 o'clock, like, be sure you're home by 10 o'clock, shut down. We know there's more going on here. We've seen from the trailer there's some science going on that may not be up to par. We don't really get a lot of answers. There's a lot of mood. There's a lot of creepiness. We've seen lots of pictures with Hunter Schafer, who severely injured, head wrapped, arm in a cast, but she's armed with her trusty butterfly knife, trying to uncover the mystery that's going on up here. So kind of a little complicated. Zach, what did you think?
Dude, Cuckoo rocks. I'm so glad we got to watch this for this show. I've heard a lot of people be like, it's weird. It didn't get me. I thought it was too simple and I figured it out. No. You got it all wrong. This is a genre fest, all right? It is a delight. People have called it Italian horror inspired. People have said it's like a slasher thriller. Like, I think Cuckoo's a ton of fun, dude. I had so much fun with this movie. And I think one of the things I like so much about it is that it is a wildly efficient feature that's probably overstuffed. It probably has like two or three too many characters. It's a little too complicated, but it moves very efficiently. Tillman Singer's like direction and writing specifically, like I think the way they storyboarded this feature and then the way they chopped up in the editing room makes for a very fast moving plot. Like, we are at this resort for, I assume, at least a week, like maybe two. Like things move pretty quick. And I like the way that the mystery very quickly like unspools in front of our heroine, and how they have to try to figure out, make sense of it and solve it and escape with their life. I love the way our heroine is just beat down over the course of the feature.
Gretchen from the beginning.
Dude, just getting beat to a pulp. I love the costume design. I like how bright red the blood is. Like, Cuckoo rocks, dude. I had a ton of fun watching this movie. What do you think?
So let's see. Let's start kind of just with vibes. The vibe of this really worked for me. I think it's filmed on 35 millimeter because it's got that grainy look. That it almost feels like an 80s movie. It's not because she has a smartphone, but if it weren't for that, I might not really be able to place this. But again, we have this family strain going on, not getting along with the parents. And we're at this weird isolated resort. There's no other kids around. There's a few adults. Everyone's really creepy. We get lots of shots like at the woods. Again, they're getting that Shining vibe. Empty hotel. No one checking in. And definitely some references to that as well. Dan Stevens doing this really good German accent. Really puts it on. You know he's up to no good from the beginning. He's like, might as well has a name tag that says Mr. Bad Guy on it. But he's a delight. And we know that, you know, not all are what they seem, and there's people going on. But there's also some strong themes. It's definitely about, like, women's rights, which I'm going to get more specific in because that's kind of spoiler. But there's definitely a lot of metaphor to go along with it as well. At one point, I thought we were kind of maybe in a time travel movie or like time a sci-fi thing, which is good misdirection because it turns out to be something not quite that, but I was just kind of glued to it the whole time.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun watching Cuckoo, so let's dig into it. I think you're right, Dan Stevens is a ton of fun in this movie, and like I've liked Dan Stevens in the past, but walking out of this I'm like, dude, we had to start talking about this guy in a different caliber of actor. Like Godzilla v. Kong, a bright spot in a cast that's otherwise very poorly used in that movie. Like all the human stuff doesn't really work. He's a lot of fun in it anyway. He's in Abigail, which we didn't cover on this show, but I hear is excellent in directing Duo Radio Silence. I hear he's wonderful in that. He's in this movie and he's great. Like just like his presence on screen just shows up. He just seems so odd. He's got this thick accent that he works so good. Like Dan Stevens rocks and he's great opposite Hunter Schafer, who is an instant star. I didn't watch Euphoria. I know they were in Euphoria. I haven't really seen that. They were briefly in Kinds of Kindness in a stupefying role, in my opinion. This is something entirely different. It is entirely unique. Gretchen is such a cool protagonist, like fascinating character, and plays great opposite her parents, Lewis and Beth, played by Martin Sokas, who we saw recently in, God, he was in The Last Duel. He's like a knight. He's like one character in that movie.
Oh, okay, okay. Stuff.
And then Jessica Henwick, who I did not expect was in this movie. Her name's on the poster. Totally forgot. Delight to see Bugs from The Matrix Revolutions back, right? Revolutions? Reloaded?
Resurrections.
Resurrection, excuse me, Matrix 4. Yes, Jessica Henwick is in this feature as well as Beth, the new mom. And then there's a newcomer, Mila Liu, plays Alma, who is Gretchen's younger sister. And the two of them do not get along great. Couldn't be more different, actually. Gretchen feels wildly isolated when they escaped this kind of resort. She's missing her friends, she's missing her family, she's missing her mom, of course, who is not currently in the picture. Like, all of these things make for Gretchen to be very emotionally deep. You get some genuine, like, crying scenes from Hunter Schafer, man. Like, deep. Like, just feels bad, going for it, digging deep, Sydney Sweeney kind of stuff, which is funny because she was also in Euphoria. Which is all really, really great when things go horribly wrong and everything gets wildly bloody. And Gretchen turns out to be not only a character of emotional depth, but visceral ability. Gretchen has a butterfly knife that she swings around and she'll snap off like a piece of wood and use it as a weapon. And that stuff rocks, dude. Like it makes for a final girl that is so much more exciting than just like a screaming dish rag character, right? Like it's somebody who's dynamic and is involved in things and is ready to murder if she's gotta. Like, great. Every time Gretchen picks up a weapon in this movie, I was so locked in. I was like the locked in meme. I was a dude sitting forward in the gaming chair. It's fantastic.
Exactly. One of the things that I think also works really well is that this is a big mystery because it's like, what is going on? You know, it's not like a slasher kind of horror. It's like, you know, something's going on. You're given some clues. I'm trying to think of things we see in the trailer. We see people are suspiciously sick. Like there's not a lot of staff around, but people are kind of sick a lot, which is, you know, concerning. Again, it's empty. And so a lot of the fun is just her very slowly being suspicious of these clues, these abnormalities, making a couple of allies, trying to uncover the truth. And the more it unravels, the more kind of it draws you in, the more intriguing it becomes. So I thought that was a big success of the movie. And I was trying to guess the whole time. I was like, well, maybe it's this happening. No, maybe it's that happening. But it's also not about you trying to guess the ending. It's a really fun journey, but also has a very engaging mystery.
Talking about Dan Stevens and mentioning Abigail, I remember hearing in a lot of reviews for that movie that it's a film that suffers from its own success, because Abigail, if you remember, the vampire child ballerina movie that came out just a couple months ago, they give away in the trailer that the child is a vampire. And the film doesn't do that. The film takes like 45 minutes to get to that. It's got the old problem, right? They shouldn't have told you up front that that was kind of the thing. They should have advertised it differently. They should have pivoted differently. I'm very pleased to tell you that Cuckoo does not have this problem. You don't know what's going on going in. You shouldn't know what's going on going in. We're not going to tell you what's going on going in. It is so much better for it. Andy's right. There's this really clever mechanic in editing and the way they've got the film put together that leads you kind of down a path of what you think may be happening. And it's good, man. It's really good, especially for a first big feature director. Tillman Singer writing and directing this does a really great job of like presenting this kind of unique mystery that is not that unique on its face. And I think is the reason some people have been kind of harsh on it coming out of the theater. Like, oh, well, you could have figured it out and I saw it coming. Nah, man, you got it all wrong. Like you were too busy looking for something that wasn't
there. There's no way.
No way. Like, oh man, people overthinking this thing. Like, I think it's totally the wrong way to go. Like I love the look of it. I like the costume design is really tremendous. Whether it's Gretchen as she's slowly getting more beat over the feature and having this like blue windbreaker kind of thing, she's got slung over her half arm with this cast and the wrap around her head, or Dan Stevens has a couple of really great fits. Good God, he's got these sunglasses in the open. There's a couple other characters I want to talk about that aren't in the trailer, and I don't want to give away who they are. But
yeah,
like,
it's tough.
Fits. I know, solid fits all around. Everybody looks good in this movie. Everybody acts good in this movie. Cuckoo's a lot of fun. I do think, I don't know if you had any thoughts about this, I do think it's edited a bit sharp. Because there are some large leaps in time that I think are confusing at first. And I should mention, I do need to ask you, Andy, specifically after the show, there is one aspect of the ending I didn't understand, and I'm going to need you to explain to me.
Oh, okay.
Did you find it at all confusing by the end? You feel like everything's wrapped up with the bow? I mean,
a little bit. I think I was able to follow it by the end of it, but I was a little... I was hanging on, but just barely, about what kind of the mystery once all is revealed, kind of how it all connects. It's definitely something that I think would benefit from a second viewing. I think it'll be really enjoyable knowing where it goes. But yeah, it was definitely a little bit hard to follow first time around.
Yeah. Good villain design, good hero design. Like Cuckoo's a ton of fun. And I'm looking forward to what Tillman Singer does next. I'm looking forward to what Hunter Schafer does next. Obviously, whatever Dan Stevens got going on, we'll probably see it. My man is having a banger year. Any other thoughts or recommendations, Andy?
I think I'm ready.
Andy, would you recommend Cuckoo?
Yeah, absolutely. I had a lot of fun with this. I was really looking forward to it, and it did not disappoint. We got a really creepy movie, big on vibes, isolated hotel, very, very much like The Shining. Hunter Schafer gives an incredible performance as Gretchen, as this lonely teenager, kind of really yearning to leave and get out of the house, but also has to survive the horrors to come. Again, is beat up to a pulp throughout this movie before things even get crazy, and has to survive in an injured state, which is really unique. So highly recommend.
Yep, same. Cuckoo rocks. From a German writer, German director, it is a different kind of horror. It has elements that are familiar, but also uniquely different. It is something different from Blumhouse. It is something different from like the same generic horror I feel like we've been seeing all summer. It is exciting. It is fresh. It is new. It's cool, dude. Cuckoo rocks. You should totally go see Cuckoo in a theater if you can, if you could swing it. I don't think it's playing on any big screens because those will either be for Deadpool and Wolverine or Borderlands, but like if you have the means, go see it as soon as you can. You're probably going to have a great time. And that's our show. Good Lord. Episode 263 of Off Script already nearly behind us. Andy, what are we watching next week?
So, this week, August 16th, we're looking at Alien Romulus, which is the new horror feature from Fede Alvarez, and features starring Kaylee Spaney and newest entry into the Alien franchise. So we'll see what that's all about. We're also going to be taking a look at Jackpot, which is coming out on Amazon Prime on August 15th. And this stars Awkwafina and John Cena, where Awkwafina's character wins the lottery, but everyone's allowed to try and murder her for her ticket. And John Cena is sent to as her bodyguard to try to get her, you know, from point A to point B to cash it. This looks like a lot of fun. It's all a little silly maybe, but it is on Amazon Prime. So if you have that, we're going to be giving that a watch. Some FYI releases. Twisters is on VOD along with Fly Me to the Moon, the rom-com with Scarlett Johansson and not Josh Hartnett. Gambit is on Channing Tatum.
Is in that.
That movie bombed, but that is, if you're looking for a rom-com, that is available on VOD as well. And upcoming in the next couple of weeks, we'll be taking a look at The Crow remake. And I don't think we're going to watch this, but Blink Twice is another Channing Tatum horror movie, which comes out in a couple of weeks. But Alien Romulus and Jackpot for next week.
Really came around on Romulus in the last couple months. The trailers look real good. And I'm an old Fede Alvarez fan, man. I like 2013 Evil Dead. So I think there's hopefully some real gas behind it. As for Jackpot, I'm real skeptical, but I'm trying to grow in the so bad it's good cinema genre, and I think it may be a good place to leverage that. It's a Paul Feig feature. We'll see. We'll cover it next week. But if you want to hear our reviews of Alien Romulus, you want to hear reviews of Jackpot, future reviews, The Crow, maybe that Blink Twice movie when it comes around. Best way to do that is subscribe to Offscript Film Review. Subscribe to the show, whether you're watching on YouTube, where we post all our videos, full reviews and individual. Big things going on the YouTube channel. You should come check it out. Whether you're on Facebook or Instagram, Twitter or TikTok, you can follow us over there, all the usual social media places. Our audio listeners, of course, are on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, iHeartMedia. Love you guys. Started with you guys. Won't stop with you guys. You can subscribe to us on those platforms as well. Of course, you can check out the website, offscriptfilmreview.com. We've got extra interviews, additional content, and you can email us correspondence directly at mail@offscriptfilmreview.com. Write into the show. Tell us what you know. Tell us what you thought of the latest feature. Tell us if we should check out something we haven't seen before. Maybe we should revisit something. D23 thoughts. Whatever you got, we're excited to talk about it. From all of us at Offscript, the home of Bold Cinema, I'm Zach Lewis.
And I'm Dr. Draper.
Thanks for watching.